offline? Excellent. Welcome to Bedtime Stories for Managers, a playful book with a serious message. Management has to come down from lofty leadership to grounded engagement. How so? By organizing like a cow instead of a chart, so that strategies can grow like weeds in a garden, as extraordinary ideas come from ordinary people who are distinctively worldly instead of cookie-cutter global. The first story sets the tone, telling how the CEO of a failing airline sat in first class while his customers in back had to eat what was called scrambled eggs. In a world as scrambled as ours, managers have to eat those eggs. That's from the opening, and the whole book is like that. Bedtime Stories for Managers by Henry Mintzberg. Read about managing with soul, organizing like a cow, growing strategies like weeds, and being a keynote listener. And more. Yes, this is a serious book. It's a fairy tale set collection of ideas, warnings, and praise for managers of all stripes and all sizes. Personally, I was intrigued by the author's request up front in the book's introduction, and yes, I usually read introductions, so should you, that readers start with the first tale. Hint, it is about scrambled eggs, Eastern Airlines, and IBM, and finish our reading with the final story. We're free to hunt and pick our way through the rest, reading them in any order if that fits our fancy of the day or the days. He encourages us to read one story each night before bedtime so that we can kind of mull it over in our sleep and our dreams and wake up with some exciting new way of managing when that new day dawns. In this day when unconventional responses to authority are the norm rather than the exception, is it worth following an author's advice, this author in particular? Well, I think so. Here's why. Because the topics that we cover are kind of broad. Actually, it's a good look at what management ought to be or can be. I don't think, having said that, that you'll be surprised that the topics covered are managing, organizing, analyzing, developing, contextualizing, responsibilifying, and, of course, the future. What I hope may surprise you are the ways these short stories, these fairy tales of management, as the title will have it, suggest ideas and ways of thinking that are larger than the mundane topics they propose to take up. After all, if all I talked about was managing, organizing, analyzing, developing, contextualizing, responsibilifying, my word, and the future, you'd say, oh yeah, what's new? For example, decision-making, our author offers, is not necessarily best done by thinking and planning first. Say that again. Decision-making is not necessarily done by thinking and planning first. He gives the example of how we choose a mate, kind of a big decision in most of our lives. Do we list all the positive characteristics we desire, then list all the possible mates we know and rank them so that we come up with the ideal candidate? No. We date again. We try out any number of people, and then we come up with our decision, very often a correct decision. This doing before thinking is why our hunches, he tells us, are often correct when we set out to hire an employee or select a car. Often we see and feel what we finally decide to go with rather than spending a lot of time researching the whole project first. And often, although of course not always, this try it before you decide it works for the best for ourselves and for whatever project we might happen to be managing and working on. I'll wrap up this part of my review with author Mintzberg's surprising ideas concerning management trees or management organization tables, whatever you happen to call it, in your organization, in your life. He urges his readers, us, to rid ourselves of our dedication to always discussing and working with charts that stress top management, and to stop disdaining the role of middle management, urging us instead to talk, to think, to act with network management in mind. As he tells us in that particular fairy tale, instead of treating middle managers as burdens on the organization, he writes, to be downsized at the first opportunity, these connecting managers can be seen as key to constructive change. In fact, the best of them, middle managers, appreciate the big picture while being grounded enough to help develop it. But there is a problem with this view too, he writes. Picturing one person in the center of this network can centralize the organization. Everything may revolve around that individual. This might be fine for a personal enterprise, but how about a project pioneer? Why not then picture it as a network or a web of people interacting every which way? But where to put the manager of such a web? Well, that's easy. Everywhere. Namely, out of the office, off some upper floor, and into the places where the organization lives. Do this, and the network can function as a community. To conclude, he writes, if you would like to do some worthwhile downsizing in your organization, begin with the bloated vocabulary of top management. Stop using it. That way, you can look all around instead of up and down to appreciate who can get each job done. Radical? In many organizations, probably so. Useful? I would say probably. So is there wisdom in these pages? Wisdom is what we make of it, yes? We can be deluged with wisdom. We can be hit over the head with wisdom. We can be subtly fed bits and pieces of wisdom. But if we don't choose to listen or to otherwise take in the wisdom, well, what will we gain? And our author agrees with that way of thinking when he asks the question, do we really live in times of great change? He writes, when a CEO sits down at a laptop to prepare a speech, the machine automatically types, quote, we live in times of great change, end quote. That's because just about every such speech over the past 50 years has started with this claim. That never changes. Do we really live in times of great change? He asks. Look around and tell me what's changed fundamentally. Your food, your furniture, your friends, your fixations. Are you wearing a tie or high heels? Why, other than because you always have? How about the engine of your car? It probably has the same basic technology that was in the Model T Ford. When you dressed this morning, did you say to yourself, if we live in times of such great change, how come we are still buttoning buttons? The kind of buttons we used appear in Germany in the 13th century, i.e. the 1200s, i.e. around 800 years ago. What's my point? That we notice only what is changing. And most things are not. Sure, we notice the internet, but try to notice all the things that are not changing. Because to manage change without managing continuity is anarchy. Now the don'ts. You don't have to be a 25-year-long manager to appreciate the wisdom and the wit in this book. You don't need to be in charge of hundreds of staff people in multiple locations to appreciate the author's urgings. You do have to have a sense of humor about you and your work. And you need to have at least a crack of an open mind so you can appreciate the sometimes jolting ideas presented here. So whether you're managing a business, an educational or government service, or find solace in the management of your home and family, Bedtime Stories for Managers has something for you. I want to finish with a penultimate tale because, as he says, you got to start with the first tale, end with a final tale, read whatever you want in between. So we'll read a little bit more in between and let you discover that first chapter and that last chapter. In the penultimate chapter, he tells us, be good. The best is too low a standard. Now, what in heaven's name does he mean by this? He goes on to tell us. How can anyone tell the best, anyway? Was Tchaikovsky better than Beethoven? Was Edith Piaf the best? Who knows? But was she ever good? Indeed, she was incomparable and therefore in no danger of being labeled the best. Michael Porter has written extensively about how to be competitive in business. With whom was he competing when he wrote his landmark book, Competitive Strategy? My favorite story about this comes from Sylvie Bernier, who won the gold medal for diving at the 1984 Olympic Games. I got to know Sylvie when she did our International Masters for Health Leadership program. One day, I asked her what really distinguishes athletes who win such high honors. Sylvie told me a striking story, not about other Olympic medalists, just about her own experience at 20 years of age. When she got into the finals, and this is at the Olympics, remember, she blocked out everyone and everything, her coach, her parents, journalists, newspapers, radio, TV, any source that could tell her how she was doing. As she came up from her last dive, Sylvie could not have known whether she had won gold or nothing. Maybe that is why she won gold. Sylvie certainly wanted to be the best. There's only one gold medal for each Olympic event. But her means to get there was by doing her best, competing with herself. So let's drop not our standards, but our obsession with being the best so that we can get on with being as good as we possibly can be. From Henry Mintzberg's newest, 20th book, Bedtime Stories for Managers, Farewell Lofty Leadership, Welcome Engaging Management. It truly is a fun book to read and a thoughtful one as well. You kind of have fun with the thoughtfulness as you're reading it. And of course, as he suggests, it doesn't hurt to read it before you're going to bed or maybe before you're going to go off and do some other activity so that the ideas that he suggests can kind of percolate through your mind as you're doing something else. And then you can wake up with that aha moment. Maybe you credit Henry, maybe you credit yourself, whatever. It's good management. It's worth a read. Bedtime Stories for Managers, it's available at all of our fine, thoughtfully and well-managed public libraries, including, of course, the West Lafayette Public Library.